Got 9 minutes to maximize your travel and casino experience? Welcome to Zorkcast, powered by Travel Zork, helping you travel smarter, gamble smarter, and maximize your adventures. From airline miles and hotel points to living in the lap of luxury in a Las Vegas casino, you'll find all the knowledge you need to travel in style. Brought to you in 9 minutes or less. Now, please welcome the host of Zorkcast, Michael Mason Traeger.
Hello, this is Michael, and welcome back to Zorkcast. I've been recording a lot of podcasts lately, so my mind's a little fried. Also, it's extremely warm in London. Steve and I are back today, and we have a very special guest. Today, we are welcoming Caesars Rewards expert Daryl of Seven Stars Insider. He also writes the Mr. AC column at Atlantic City Weekly. That's something you should definitely be checking out if you want to know everything that's going on in Atlantic City and the most current news. And that will bring us to our topic today, which revolves around Atlantic City casino openings. How is this gonna work? So, hello, Steve. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Great. And Daryl, welcome aboard.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Great. And how's the day treating you, Daryl? Everything going well,
In your neck of the woods? It's still early here, so it's doing fine. But I just heard the weather report on TV, and we're supposed to have reduced humidity this afternoon and lower temperatures. So that means I have to cut the grass.
Just make sure you're socially distant when you're cutting the grass.
Yeah, well, it's hard to be socially distanced from a lawnmower, but, we'll try.
Okay. Well, I know we've bantered a little bit recently because I've been asking you, so what's going on with Atlantic City? When is the governor going to make a decision? What's happening?
Well,
and I think we finally have some news.
Yeah, there's still a lot of unanswered questions, but what we do know is that the governor has authorized the Atlantic City casinos to reopen a week, beyond Thursday, July 2nd. What's missing is what he describes as further health and safety protocols that will allow for the casinos to reopen. And those have not been fully fleshed out yet. What he has said is you could expect that the protocols will include mandatory face coverings and or masks. I guess they're kind of the same thing. And health screenings for all visitors and staff. And he's, taking a pretty tough line. His quote yesterday I read was, if any visitor refuses to comply with these simple safeguards, they will be escorted out of the casino. We're not going to tolerate any knuckleheads trying to ruin it for those who want to enjoy themselves responsibly. So, I hope that's true, but we'll see. Now, even though the casinos have the go-ahead, all the casinos except Tropicana have announced plans. They will reopen on the 2nd, but there are a couple of, they're not exceptions, but some different rules. For instance, Bally's, Caesars, and Harrah's, which are all operated and owned by Caesars Entertainment, they'll be open only to hotel guests and invited guests on July 2nd, that first day. And then they will open to all guests on Friday, July 3rd. So you can look for some more information on that to see if you got an invitation. I have chosen not to go. I wouldn't go to Atlantic City on a holiday weekend, even if it weren't for, being quarantined for 3 months. But I hope it goes well for them. The other exception, if you can call it that, is Borgata Hotel, Casino, and Spa. It's an official name. They will not open their doors to the general public until 10 o'clock East Coast time on Monday, July 6th. They're going to host an invitation-only trial period starting on the 2nd. There's a little directive that authorizes a family and friends period, otherwise known as a soft opening in many businesses. And it'll give the casino some time to assess its new procedures and how well they're working. Borgata has issued the most complete statement, but I'm sure this is true for all of them when they open. Not all of their amenities are going to be open right away. They're going to plan to phase them in over the coming weeks, just to see how business levels are and how customers, comply with these new regulations that are coming out.
I saw with Borgata, with the friends and family, they also actually in their verbiage made a specific example of Noir and Platinum hosted invited guests.
Yeah.
So I actually saw that reference too. And I did tweet out yesterday that they have a pretty good selection of restaurants that they expect to be open. But the one thing that I'm hoping that you could provide a little bit of, well, there's a lot of things I would love clarity on. But one thing is this continuous mention of 25%.
Yeah.
What does this mean? Is this 25% hotel occupancy? Is this 25% like fire code occupancy of the casino floor?
That's what I understand. Again, it's not real official, but it has nothing to do with the hotel capacity. It is strictly the casino capacity. You know, when you walk into a lot of buildings these days or big ballrooms or whatever, there'll be a sign on the, you know, on the wall near the entrance saying that the authorized capacity is, you know, X, 1,000 or whatever it is. That's the number they're going to use for determining the 25%. Now, what nobody has explained to me, or hopefully they figured it out, is how they're going to do this unless they have some sort of an elaborate, techie walkie-talkie system. Because a lot of the casinos have several entrances. Just to say with Borgata for a moment, people can enter through the water club, through that shopping area. They could come in from the rear parking lot. They could come in from the front door where valet was. There will not be any valet to begin with at any of the casinos. Or they can come in from the self-parking garage. So that's at least four entrances. So I'm not sure how they're going to be able to track that.
But, and also the surf, and they also have the surface.
Yeah, that's what I refer to as the back lot.
what's sort of interesting here, and I've been following some of this. You know, they've done that before when I used to gamble in Indiana on the riverboats. They used to have a strict fire capacity, what was then Argosy and is now, I think, Hollywood Casino. And they used to, during the busy season, they used to have a strict one-on, one-off kind of thing. So as somebody got on the boat, as someone got off the boat, someone could get on the boat just for fire regulations. I could see them possibly trying to do that in Atlantic City if they could figure out the entrances and exits. But what I find to be really, really, really mystified at how they're going to execute this is that, you know, there are a lot of people waiting to go back to these casinos. And I would say far more probably than 25% capacity. And I guess maybe if you go back historically, if you recall when resorts first opened, there were lines on the boardwalk outside of resorts due to capacity issues of people getting into the only casino on the East Coast.
Sure.
But I'm not sure if people are really ready yet to basically come up to their favorite casino property entrance and be told, you're going to have to wait to get in because we're at capacity right now. So I think it's definitely going to be interesting. It is interesting also when you mentioned the entrances and exits, because I was having a conversation with somebody the other day, and I believe that Encore Boston Harbor has ordered a thermoscan machinery for 11 entrances and exits to be able to do the thermo scanning as customers enter. So, you know, preparing with all the entrances and exits. But this is definitely going to be quite confusing. Now, the other thing I was wondering, because this is something I've been critical of with Las Vegas. Las Vegas asked every casino to create their own plan, submit their plan to gaming, and then gaming approved the plans. In New Jersey, is gaming sort of making the rules where the plans will be consistent? So when Las Vegas first opened, Cosmopolitan had social distancing, employees with masks, but there was no plexiglass or masks required for people playing at table games. This is when they first opened. Mm-hmm. Whereas Caesars had masks required for table games. Like everybody had their own. It was very inconsistent. Is New Jersey going with a consistent strategy, or do you have any clarity on any of
that? Well, that's what we're still waiting to hear from the governor. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's a little unfair, you know, that he's waited this long, you know, to make the announcement and then to further delay things by asking the casinos to wait for, you know, more health and safety protocols. So I don't know. It appears that the only things that are consistent right now are going to be the face mask and the health screenings for all everybody, you know, that includes players and employees. But, you know, jumping the gun a bit, and I'm sure you saw this, where both resorts and Hard Rock put out, I'll call them white papers for lack of a better description, detailing all the things that they've been doing over the last 3 months, including putting in some very expensive, you know, air freshener equipment and other means to make sure that everybody feels safe. And everybody is talking about, you know, increased disinfecting of machines and dice and playing cards and all that sort of thing. So you're going to see that, but that's not going to be anything that really is a concern directly with the player. It's just going to be, I think, expected, and they'll see it in action. And of course, hand sanitizers everywhere, signs everywhere saying, please stay 6 feet apart. But, you know, again, we're just in sort of a limbo right now, waiting for the governor's other requirements. I'm going to see Friday, Harrah's Philadelphia, which is about 20 minutes from where I live. They're opening with some slightly different but similar restrictions. They're requiring everybody to have a mask. And of course, there'll be temperature checks and all that sort of thing. But I'm curious to see how gambling will have changed in a COVID-19 environment that we're in now. And I'm hoping to talk to some players and asking them, why are you here today? And don't you have any concerns? And blah, blah, blah. And that's going to be the basis for my July 2nd History C Casino column. So it will be, you know, I'm trying to, you know, recreate a firsthand experience about what going into an Atlantic City casino is going to be like without going into an Atlantic City casino. But, you know, assuming that it's going to be similar to what we find in Philadelphia this week.
This is going to be really interesting to see, because I've noticed in Vegas and seeing all the stuff coming out of Vegas, there's a lot of inconsistencies between the different properties at the moment.
Yeah. Well, the governor is going to have a press conference this afternoon, 5 o'clock local time in Las Vegas, and he's going to be discussing the coronavirus. And my guess is he is going to put a requirement in that, and again, this is my guess, everybody has to wear a mask in Las Vegas, not just the table game players. You know, he's getting a lot of pushback from not only players, but also employees. The culinary union is really been lobbying for, you know, better protection for its employees. And the only way you really can get that is to require everybody to wear a mask, except, of course, you know, when you're eating or drinking.
I've been predicting all along that Las Vegas is eventually going to go to masks being required for all resort guests, just because in the short term, for the abundance of caution, I think it just makes sense. Steve and I have talked about this extensively. I've talked about it with others. I don't really like to get too much into the politics of this kind of thing, but I do very much believe that we have short term, medium term, and long term solutions. And short term, I think pretty much so, most of the world is in agreement that employees and customers wearing masks at a resort is probably a prudent thing to do in the short term. I also think having a clear rule. I mean, I think telling people you've got to wear them while you're at the tables, you don't have to wear them at the slots, or maybe it's optional over here, or you should wear them over there. I don't think people are very good with if-then scenarios with that. I think they really sort of want to know what they're supposed to do. And even if they don't like it, at least if it's clear, they'll follow the rules. Most people.
Yeah. And that, it also gives some ammunition to the casino management and their security folks or whoever is going to enforce these things to say, you know, hey, you need a mask. And, you know, well, I don't want to. Well, you know, it's a state requirement. That's what we have in Delaware. It's been in effect for a month, I think. Now, you know, anybody who goes out to a grocery store or a liquor store or anywhere in public, you must wear a mask. So, and there are signs on every door that you enter indicating this. And so, you know, it puts the onus on the state and not the small business owner or the big business owner to tell, you know, its customers that you can't come in because you're not wearing a mask.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly feel more comfortable in a casino. Matter of fact, today I was checking all the morning papers, and one of the Philadelphia newspapers erroneously stated that you don't have to wear a mask when you go into a Pennsylvania casino. And it turns out that's not true. Because when I first read it, I thought, oh, gosh, is the information I got directly from Harrah's incorrect? And I thought, gosh, you know, I don't know that I want to go there on Friday. I don't like to wear them. They're uncomfortable. But I do feel strongly that if you're in an environment with lots of folks that the mask is probably the best way to go. You know, the latest studies we're seeing are that it's not so much picking up the virus from touching your mail or a package or a can of soup in the grocery store, but from a cough or even a conversation. You know, you're spewing germs or whatever. So I'm all for the masks, even though I don't really want to wear them, but I think that's the best way to go at this point.
Do you think enforcing people to wear a mask is going to bring down the number of patrons for the casinos?
Well, it probably will, but then it's going to be, you know, with the reduction, you know, like for instance, in New Jersey, you can only have 25% capacity. In Pennsylvania, you can only have 50% capacity. When you factor in those numbers, yes, it may reduce the people who want to come, but, you know, the availability of space in the casino is also down. So it may just even itself out. I mean, I hope it does. I'm sure that there's going to be some angry customer who's going to kind of fight it and say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to wear a mask. That's now they've got the arm of the law behind them, if you will.
Well, how about, Daryl, my million-dollar questions, especially since you were just mentioning Philadelphia, and obviously we'll pivot a little bit to Atlantic City. So benefits and changes with regard to the properties. I did notice a note that Borgata, I think, said no housekeeping. I might be wrong about that. Any clarity on what Caesars is going to do from the Seven Stars Insider side as far as the Seven Stars Lounge, the Laurel Lounges, housekeeping? We're pretty sure there's going to be no valet parking for opening. Have you gotten any word on any of that? Or how is Philadelphia dealing with the Laurel Lounge?
Yes, nothing definitive. My guess is that the lounges will not open. Perhaps the Seven Stars Lounge will open because the food and beverage service is served by servers, talking about using the same word three times, whereas the Laurel Lounges, until they make some adjustments, are, you know, buffet style, you know, except for your beverages. The Laurel Lounge is definitely going to be closed in Philadelphia. I did get that word. And what they're going to do is, if you have 25,000 or more tier credits, either from your play since January 1 of this year or over the calendar year last year, they're going to give you a $10 per day food and beverage credit. And that is, well, there are only going to be two outlets open, and that's their market, which is, you know, pizzas and sandwiches and things, or Guy Fieri's, which is a full service restaurant. But they did stress that, you know, the available menu items perhaps will be more limited and so forth. So that's their adjustment. And I do have on the Seven Stars Insider website what some of the other casinos around the country are doing to kind of make up for the fact that their Laurel Lounge is closed, or there aren't that many Seven Stars Lounges. And many of them are not doing anything. Some are more generous than others. For instance, and the rules are different at all the casinos. Out in Harrah's Resort, Southern California, outside of San Diego, they give Seven Stars two free buffets every day. Well, there is no buffet any longer. So they're giving a $40 food and beverage credit once a week to Seven Stars. So, you know, that makes up.
Well, some of those seem fair. I mean, the Vegas benefit of four drinks at a designated bar, and the drinks can be up to $20 each, is a pretty darn good benefit a day.
Yeah.
If you maximize on the drink value, because that's $80 in drinks.
Yeah.
I did also clarify that when you use the benefit at Starbucks at Caesars in Las Vegas, it isn't for just one drink. It's for an order. Just the order can have no food on it. So that's pretty good too, because you can get a good couple of coffees there for $20. The only thing, so I think the benefit, what they did in Vegas was pretty good. I thought the food benefit was a little bit stingy for the Seven Stars, but I thought the drink benefit for Diamond Plus and above was very, very fair. The only thing that I have a little bit of a gripe on, and maybe it's personal, is what they did with the Seven Stars Companions. And I just think the verbiage of the sign is incorrect if they're going to exclude the Seven Stars Companions. I actually don't mind so much the exclusion of the Seven Stars Companions, but I mind the fact that the sign is not worded properly.
I don't have it in front of me. I'm not so sure I've read that Seven Stars Companion is not an earned, you know, tier level. You don't have to have any tier credits, you know, if and have that card. So I don't quibble with that. It's just not the same to me as a Diamond Plus or a Diamond.
Oh, no. I agree with you on that. my problem with it is that they're not giving anything to Diamond. And a lot of Diamond people said, this isn't fair. It's only Diamond plus and above.
Yeah.
My reaction to that was, yeah, but if you were a Diamond, you had to pay to get into the lounge anyway, and under exactly. 25,000. So I said, so basically, how are they going to give you a credit when you had to pay? So yeah. What are they going to say? You're going to pay the copay and we'll give you the credit?
Yeah.
Now, the only problem is, though, legitimately, a 7-star companion can get into the lounge. So it is a true devaluation because the 7-star companion actually gets nothing now.
Yeah.
Whereas they got it before. But I understand what you're saying. And I do try to see both sides of it. I just, you know, my little bit of a joke, and I know we joke about language, and I think this week we've both had a tough time about accuracy and language on things, is that the sign specifically says Diamond Plus and above get this drink benefit. And I was sort of joking with Caesars, in quotations, a little bit. I said, well, it says Diamond Plus and above. So doesn't it go Diamond Plus, 7-star companion, 7-star? Because 7-star companion is not below Diamond Plus. Diamond's below Diamond Plus. So I was just playing the language thing a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. I don't, that didn't bother me because I don't consider companion, a level.
No, I know. I was having a little bit of fun with it. And I'll tell you that 99% of the 7-star companions out there agreed with.
Yeah.
Well, they surprised me, yeah. Drinks.
Well, you know, the thing is, in Las Vegas, the drinks are free anyway if you're playing on the floor. And that's the same situation even at Harrah's Philadelphia. The drinks are free. Yet if you go into the Laurel Lounge, you pay for drinks. So, again, you know, and I would say I really should get these statistics down because I'm always talking about this. I would say that probably – less than half of the Laurel lounges around the country give you free drinks, and that's because of state laws or tribal laws. For instance, down at Harrah's, the two Cherokee properties, I asked them, well, you know, what are you going to be, are you going to do anything to make up for the fact that your Laurel lounges are not open? They said, oh, the Laurel lounges are open. There won't be any food service, but the bar service will be available. Well, the bar service is available if you want to pay for a drink. I mean, all you're getting is maybe a more quiet atmosphere, you know, but so most of the casinos, you're not getting free drinks anyway. And it could very well be that state law would translate into the same reason that they can't give you a beverage credit in lieu of the lounges being closed. I mean, every state has got such crazy laws, but I do agree. The food credit is just ridiculous. I mean, what can you get for $10 at the old Homestead Steakhouse? I mean,
well, I joked about it. Is for $10 you could get almost half of an onion soup.
Yeah,
you could have half of a French. You could have about half of a French onion soup for. Yeah, I thought that was. And you know what? Honestly, to me, that was sort of funny because I figured, you know what? If you give somebody $25 or $30, you're pretty much so incenting them to go to Old Homestead or one of the other venues. And those places are so expensive to begin with, they're going to use their reward credits or going to pay their money, right? Because if you say, hey, I got $25, chances are you're going to spend $50 or $70 or $80, right? So it's actually probably a good move to give someone, whereas the way that I think about it, if you're only going to give me $10, that's not enough of an incentive to make me go to Old Homestead again. But yeah. Maybe I think a little bit differently on that. So overall, Daryl, how do you feel about the way New Jersey, we'll just finish up with this, and then sure. I'll ask you a couple of other 7-star, you know, places to find you and things. How do you feel New Jersey's handled this? Do you think they're being too cautious? Do you think they, you know, the governor, I see a lot of mixed reactions about the governor. Is he trying to do you think he's trying to do the right thing? Do you think the communication has been good? I mean, what's your overall impression on it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not a New Jersey resident, but I think he's being extra cautious. But I think in this time, you need to be. And, you know, I think the statistics are bearing it out that what he's done or what he hasn't done in terms of opening up businesses is paid off. And look at New York the same way. I mean, Cuomo has certainly taken a lot of heat for holding off on reopening businesses and facilities and parks. But, you know, it's, you know, he's gone from number one to, you know, whatever in terms of the number of cases of the virus. So I wouldn't want to be in any of their shoes, frankly, because you're never going to please everybody. But what's weird, and again, you know, I speak from a strange perspective here in Delaware. We are almost equidistant from Maryland, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey. All four states have totally different regulations. I mean, last week I couldn't stand it any longer, and I went to a Great Clips to get a haircut. And I've been going to the same person down at the Borgata for, 12, 15 years, or however long they've been open. So, but I needed to do something. But yet, my friends who live in Pennsylvania, unless they come across the border, they couldn't go get a haircut or go to a salon to get a trim or a color or whatever until this week. Same thing with indoor dining and outdoor dining. I mean, I think it's now indoor dining in Delaware, but it's not in Pennsylvania or New Jersey. I mean, it's very difficult to know where you stand because we don't have any consistency among the states.
It is difficult. And I'll just interject, especially for you, Steve.
I dream of a haircut.
I need to get you into this New Jersey thing. The barber shop at Borgata is great. This is a casino that has a men's proper barber shop, which is, and it's a lovely space. It's one of the greatest, and I get shaves there all the time, but it's one of the nicest features of Borgata. And I think they have a pool table and a nice waiting room, and it's just a great, it is an absolute great facility, and it makes me so happy.
Does that mean you're taking me, Michael?
Yeah, that's what I'm taking you. Daryl, Steve's never been to Atlantic City, and I'm trying to entice him with just stopping these constant trips to Las Vegas, from London Gatwick Airport, of all places. So that's an inside joke.
Or whatever from Gatwick.
But I will agree with you, Daryl. The inconsistency drives me crazy on a lot of this stuff. And, Steve and I are involved in a lot of the casino and Vegas UK groups and even UK travel groups. And people will say things like, well, doesn't the United States have a quarantine for this or a quarantine for that? We're like, it does not. It works. Everything works state by state, guys. It doesn't work like that. People keep thinking there's some rule for the United States. I'm like, barely. So anyhow, just to finish this up, Daryl, tell us a little bit, because some of the people listening don't know about Seven Stars Insider. I just want you to, I'll obviously put the links in the show notes, but if you could just tell everybody a little bit about what you do at Seven Stars Insider, and also maybe a little bit about your column in Atlantic City Weekly, and I'll put that all in the show notes.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the Seven Stars Insider, I keep saying I really have to look. I believe it was back in 2008, 2009. I hate the term retreat, the free trip you get. And I decided to go to what that time was called the Biloxi Grand. It's now the Harris Gulf Coast for my trip. And, I found, and this is at the very beginning of the Seven Stars program, that hardly anybody on the staff there really knew what to do with me. They weren't sure what to do with that $500 food credit. What was it? Or I shouldn't say food credit, it's a room credit, folio credit, what it included. And they were charging me for my liquor. They were saying, oh, I'm sorry, no, it doesn't cover wine. Well, it did. And all that. I guess we had cell phones in those days. But for whatever reason, I had a call into my host, and I was sort of stuck in my room for several hours waiting for her to call back. She had sort of farmed out the trip plans to a Southeastern regional office. And of course, this was a Saturday and nobody was open. And so I was trying to get clarification of what was going on. And so, I'm a writer by trade and I do websites for clients. And so I just sat down at my laptop and started making notes and writing. And I thought it just pulled Seven Stars Insider out of the air, basically. And I checked it out and to get a free Google website, and it was available. And when I got back to Delaware after the trip, after my regular work day, I just started thinking, well, what else could I write? And I started thinking about all the properties I'd been to and little tips that I had come across. And then over the next couple of months, when I would be at a Seven Stars event or any kind of an event, we would start talking and somebody would say, gee, did you know you could do this? Or did you know you could do that? And so I just started keeping notes and it just sort of mushroomed. And now I have a page on every one of the Caesars properties with basically the same sorts of information about parking and Laurel Lounge and what you get for benefits if there's something special. And the newsletter also has just sort of taken off. I mean, I have more than 10,000 subscribers and I don't take any money. I don't take ads. I try to remain as even-minded as possible, even though sometimes the Caesars folks think that I'm after them. But I try to be fair. And some of the Caesars folks, you know, they won't admit it publicly. They say that, hey, listen, you know, you're doing us a great service, you know. And it's something Caesars should have done on its own, is frankly, these websites and these newsletters. Anyway, that's that. And then that sort of progressed into my being contacted by one of the editors at the Press of Atlantic City. They were revamping one of their weekly publications called At the Shore, and they wanted to add some columnists. And they did add one on wine, they added one on fashion, and then they wanted one on casinos, obviously. So I didn't name it. I was given the name, Mr. AC Casino, and it runs every 2 weeks. And about, 2 years ago, they switched it to their sister publication called the Atlantic City Weekly. So that's where it is, and you can see it online. You go to acweekly.com and look for, I think they're called blogs on the online version. And that's the newsletter. And now the last month or so, because the casinos have been closed and there hasn't been a lot of advertising or a lot to write, they've moved me to once a week. And I'm in the Thursday Press of Atlantic City, but that will end tomorrow. And I assume I'll go back to the Atlantic City Weekly every other week starting July 2nd. Interestingly, the day the casinos reopen. And all these links, and if you do something, Michael, that'd be great. But you know, you can go to any of my sites, whether it's 7starsinsider.com or mrACcasino.com. And of course, don't forget what I write for Travel Zork every month. That's also about Atlantic City. Yeah. And there are links on all these. If you find one site, you can find the rest.
No, it's really great stuff. And forever, Daryl, whenever I say I'm speaking to Daryl, I always say I'm speaking to Daryl 7 Stars Insider. It sort of all goes together. That's your complete name to me, is Daryl 7 Stars Insider. But which is great, because it's been a wonderful resource. So we are definitely out of time. Steve, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Las Vegas UK.
Excellent. And you can find me at Travel Zork. Be sure to join the Travel Zork Zorkcast Facebook group. And Daryl, thank you so much. And I can't wait to hear more. Great. Everyone have a great day. And until next time.
You've reached the end of your stay with us on this episode. But we encourage you to visit our website for more resources at TravelZork.com and to continue the conversation on Twitter and Instagram at TravelZork and Facebook.com/TravelZork. Travel smarter, gamble smarter, and maximize your adventures right here on Zorkcast. Until next time, good luck.